So I thought I'd talk a bit about the Buddha's enlightenment today, as we've celebrated the festival of the Buddha's enlightenment, which we do every year because it's just such an important aspect of the whole of the practice of Buddhism, the insight that the Buddha came to in his enlightenment through his own practice. And as I said in the dedication at the beginning of the ceremony, the Buddha's enlightenment isn't just an idea or a thought or an intellectual construct or a set of teachings that we can learn somehow. It isn't something to learn about. It's much more a state of being. We have to live the Buddha's enlightenment, and that was what was the important thing for the Buddha, was seeing his insight into the way the world works, the way human beings work, wasn't just to have an interesting view of things. The whole point was to then live based on that. So how do we live and put into practice the Buddha's enlightenment? And when we first come to practice and we hear about the Buddha's enlightenment, it's very easy to form an idea in our mind of this thing which is just, well, the problem is we don't know what it is, so we kind of fill in the blank, and we maybe think it's something that's just beyond our reach, or it's just so extravagantly super that we ourselves, starting from where we are, how could we possibly know it? And we almost define it as being something that's not open to us, or is beyond our reach, or beyond our understanding. As we go on, we may come to see that actually that's not very helpful, defining it as something that I actually can't get to. But still, if we don't know what it is, we describe it to ourselves in certain ways based on our experience of life so far, based on our experience of practice so far. And if we have any thoughts about enlightenment, we have to acknowledge that actually there, how do I know what enlightenment is like? It's essentially a confused person trying to imagine what it's like to be no longer confused. That really doesn't make sense. How can we imagine, understand a different way of being that's different from how we are now? We might think about certain aspects that it will have, that we won't create suffering, that we will be able to see things clearly. But we, again, it's just that their thoughts, with their imaginings. And ahead of time, we really can't come to a clear picture or a clear understanding of what that is. Or to put it the other way around, any idea about it that we come to will actually be a bit of an obstruction, a bit of a thing that gets in our own way, because we set up this thing that we perhaps can't reach, can't touch. But in having fixed ideas about it, we may actually miss the aspects of enlightenment that are already here in our practice here and now. And in a way, this is what that image of the wrestler that was mentioned in the offertory is all about. The wrestler who has a jewel between his eyebrows, but because he doesn't know it's there, he utterly loses its value, in the sense that he isn't able to make use of it because he doesn't know it's there. The wrestler is wrestling with conditions, causes, wrestling with the outside world, wrestling with his own greed, hate and delusion in order to try and get the thing he feels is valuable. But in seeing that thing that is valuable as being outside and separate from himself, he's always wrestling to attain something. He doesn't know what it is. He doesn't know what it looks like. How will he know when he comes across it? It's always looking for something outside that we haven't yet got. And that can be so easily what our view, our understanding of enlightenment is. It's something somewhere else, something that isn't part of my existence at the moment that I need to somehow reach for and grasp. And in having an idea, having a vision of what this jewel might look like, the wrestler completely misses out on the jewel that he already has, because it perhaps doesn't quite meet his view of what that jewel should look like. And I think that's one of the great traps that we can get caught in, or catch ourselves in Buddhist practice, that we set up an idea of what enlightenment might be and then try and attain that idea, try and conform ourselves to that idea. But what is that idea based on? It's just based on our... It's someone who doesn't know about something yet coming up with an idea of what it is and then trying to conform ourselves to that. And why on earth do we think that would be an exact description of it? So we're trying to conform ourselves, trying to reach something that is in itself an illusion, because it's not based on any reality. It's just a thought, an idea, a view that we've come up with. And it can be quite some while, really, as we carry on with practicing, that we're still kind of looking outside ourselves for something we don't yet know. We're looking for somehow that inspiration or that cosmic zap, or however we think of it, to be kind of beamed into us through the practice of our meditation somehow. So if that isn't the helpful way to look at in the Buddha's enlightenment, if that isn't the way that we approach it or understand it, then how actually should we understand the Buddha's enlightenment, or our enlightenment? How do we understand enlightenment in our practice? We remind ourselves of it every year through the celebrating the festival of the Buddha's enlightenment, and actually the reminders of it all through the year in all the scriptures that we recite and the practice we do and all of the different things we talk about. But what is the Buddha's enlightenment? The Buddha himself, the way he talked about enlightenment and what he came to understand, what we know about that comes from the Pali scriptures. And in those, the Buddha describes the practice that he went through when he first sat down underneath the Bodhi tree during that period, and in the weeks afterwards. And as part of that process, he describes coming to understand the truth of the Four Noble Truths, and coming to understand the truth of dependent origination, and the three characteristics of existence: no separate self, suffering and impermanence. All of these basic teachings of Buddhism is what he came to see the truth of, the reality of. It's not about some mystical, magical state of mind that suddenly appears and that's it, there's a big explosion of light and everything's wonderful. It's about coming to see the reality of those truths, which he then spent the rest of his life trying to explain to others, trying to tell people about. So in our lives, what does it then mean to experience and express enlightenment? One of the important teachings about meditation is that we're not trying to gain or experience a particular state of mind. It's not about states of mind. And so easily we can view the Buddha's enlightenment as an experience, a state of mind that at some point will get switched on, like the Christmas lights. But it isn't like the switching on of the Christmas lights. It isn't like... How could it just be a state of mind? And the reason it can't just be a state of mind is that, as we all know from our experience, all states of mind come and go. It is the nature of states of mind that they are fleeting. The understanding that the Buddha is talking about isn't about always being happy or always being anything in particular. as circumstances change, our inner response to circumstances change. For anyone who thinks that enlightenment is always being happy, well, what about when you get ill, or when a relation dies, or someone you know is in an accident? Is happy actually a good response to that? Is that an appropriate response to that? No, of course we feel grief. There is an empathy there. There's a sympathetic response. If we think that enlightenment is a state of mind, and that we will reach this unperturbable place where circumstances will never make a difference to our state of mind, then we're grasping for an illusion, really, because as beings, that's not how existence is. States of mind come and go. So if we're not grasping for a state of mind, what is our own practice of the Buddha's enlightenment? And I think one of the clues is in the Buddha describing himself being enlightened as to the truth of the Four Noble Truths, the truth of the dependent origination, and the other basic teachings that he then continued to talk about. As we gradually come to see for ourselves how greed, hate and delusion arise in our own minds, how when we act on that, we feel separate from the world around us, we feel separate from our fellow human beings, our suffering increases, basically. We feel more isolated and alone, and we feel like we want to grasp for something outside to fill that, what seems to be a void. As we see that going on within ourselves, when we feel that suffering, and when we begin to link that with actually how I behave, how I go about things, it's clear that how I behave and how I go about things needs to change. I need to do things differently. And when we do that, we see that indeed we're no longer causing that suffering for ourselves. And when that suffering is no longer being generated, no longer being caused within ourselves, it's like no longer throwing stones into a pond. The ripples on the surface gradually die down. It's not that a thing called happiness or contentment is generated through our actions. It's much more we begin to get a glimpse of, within us, the Buddha sitting beneath the Bodhi tree. That stillness, that serenity, that calmness within the states of mind that come and go, within the outer circumstances and conditions that come and go, we begin to get a glimpse of that jewel between the eyebrows, that Buddha sitting beneath the Bodhi tree that was always already there, but that we hadn't seen, hadn't noticed, because we were throwing so many things into the pond, that there were so many ripples, that we couldn't see the reflection. The reflection of the true mind, the reflection of the true Buddha, that when, as those ripples begin to calm down a bit, we begin to see the pattern within the ways that we do things. And as we refrain from acting in ways that cause suffering for ourselves, that view of Buddha beneath the Bodhi tree, that sense of Buddha within, of true nature, as we see that more clearly, that in itself helps us to see at a more subtle level the ways in which we cause confusion for ourselves, we cause suffering. And so it's a virtuous circle, if you like. As we're able to sit more still, we see more how we cause suffering. As we see that and refrain from doing it, we're then able to sit more still. And that in turn leads us to be able to see a bit more clearly. As we see a bit more clearly and refrain from doing the things that cause harm, again, that sense of stillness deepens, broadens, and comes to be a much more present presence within our life. This is what we might talk about not as enlightenment, but another word that we use to talk about the Buddha's enlightenment, realization. It's about it doesn't mean that we intellectually realise, oh, I realise I shouldn't do that. It means making it real. It's making real the Buddha's teaching in our daily lives. That's the realising of it. And so, as I said, it's not an idea, it's not a theory, it's not simply a set of teachings. Yes, there are a set of teachings, there are all sorts of ideas. But if that's where we get to and we stop with the ideas, then that isn't actually Buddhism. And Buddhism is the realisation of it, or as Dogen says, the actualisation of it. It's actually living it in our lives. And when we do that, we may look at ourselves and our life and our practice and wonder how much of the Buddha's enlightenment, the Buddha's realisation, have we realised and are we putting into practice? But that's really not any different from having a view of enlightenment and seeing whether we measure up to it. How, on what basis can I look at myself and say, oh, 10% there, or 32 1/6% there? What would that actually mean? The practice of ongoing meditation, of ongoing Buddhist life, is really to look at the way we do things. Look at in the sense of just being aware of the way that we do things, aware of our own actions, and seeing within that those aspects of our actions that aren't that skillful and are causing harm for others and causing suffering for ourselves. That's the next step, is to, having seen that, to work on not doing those things. It doesn't matter at that point whether we're 1% or whether we're 98%, 99.5%. That's just a concept. The practicality of it, the reality of it, the realization aspect of it, is that we see in a very practical and real way the little things I do, or the views I have of other people, or the way I talk to people, or whatever it might be, that causes the suffering. And we see that it's important to refrain from that, and we make that real. We realise the Buddha's enlightenment by actually refraining. And we realise it isn't... We realise, this is the other sort of realise, we intellectually realise that it isn't a straight line path, that we can't just say, oh, I see I shouldn't act that way, so let's not act that way, that's it. Okay, what's the next thing? It isn't, generally speaking, perhaps always, it isn't as simple as that, because the reasons why we do behave in that way can have all sorts of, sometimes very deep-rooted, causes and conditions. And they may be what we might call karmic, and they may be other things that are genetic or are to do with the way the conditions and causes we experience when we were young and growing up. The insight of meditation may reveal to us some of those causes and conditions, but actually the important thing within that is that we come to accept how things are, and that we then respond to that as seems appropriate, and do our best to refrain from causing harm, causing confusion, causing suffering. And as we work away at that, and there is a gradual transformation of that tendency to be nasty to this particular person or whoever it might be, or a tendency to worry about what's going on, or be anxious, or be jealous, or, you know, all these different things that can arise. As we work on and transform those tendencies, we may not see all of the causes, but once they're let go of, it doesn't matter anymore. Once they are not active in our life, it actually doesn't matter what all the causes and conditions that led to them were. If we, through our practice, can see clearly what's going on, and take the decision not to carry on doing that, and are able, even though it's a slow progress and it sometimes seems like two or three steps forward and then another two or three steps back and then a little bit of a step forward, and it seems very non-linear and sometimes can seem a bit of a struggle. Nevertheless, the willingness to do that, to give ourselves to that process, is the realization. That's the making real of the Buddha's practice. And every little extra bit that we see, every little extra bit that we refrain from causing harm, is another aspect of the Buddha's enlightenment. It's another facet of that jewel that we ourselves have come to see, to uncover, and are polishing, and it shines. We ourselves may not see that shine, but sometimes those around us do see it a bit more. And often it doesn't feel like I'm getting to be a better person, I'm more enlightened. It doesn't feel like that usually. But when we reflect on it, we can sometimes notice that actually there's not as much suffering as there was. It seems to me that the fruits of training aren't some kind of prize that we're given, some kind of wonderful thing that we're given. It's much more that the suffering that we felt gradually decreases, gradually doesn't have such an effect in our lives, gradually fades away as we refrain from reinforcing it over and over again. And that's the real gift. Not that anything is added, but that sense of suffering is let go of. And what we come to is not a big prize of a golden Buddha presented to us. Much more the me that was there underneath that layer of suffering it begins to show a bit more. And I use the term me rather loosely. I'm not trying to define what that is. But the sense of the Buddha within that was covered by all sorts of veils and shrouds, and as those veils drop away, is able to be shown and seen in the world a bit more. But we come to that not through having a view of what enlightenment is and then trying to match ourselves to that, because it's always a faulty view. Much more just by seeing what is the next step, what is it within my life that is calling to me and saying, hey, there's something here to take notice of. There's a way in which I'm making things more difficult for myself by acting in a way that causes suffering for me and probably for those around me as well. And so whenever we see the Buddha's enlightenment, hear about it, see pictures and think, wow, that must be lovely, and have some kind of idea or some kind of mystical, special, otherworldly type thing, just to notice that actually that doesn't help. That's not going to help us at all. It's much more seeing that the Buddha's enlightenment is the realization, the making real of the understanding of how the universe works, particularly in the way that the cause and effect of our intentional actions and the effect that that has on us works. And being willing to see that, however much it hurts, being willing to see that over and over again is the way forward through which we realise, actualise, make real in this world the Buddha's enlightenment.